Yo, what up? It's DK. Thank you so much for listening to the Mixing Music Podcast. I just want to do a quick plug about Antares and Auto-Tune. Antares makes the original industry standard Auto-Tune that we all know and love the sound of. We are sponsored by them, so if you visit mixingmusicpodcast.com/Auto-Tune, we do get a small kickback from every purchase. Thank you so much for supporting the show. Please enjoy this episode.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I am your host, DK, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Landslide Lou.
That's why they know me as a home wrecker.
What?
Landslides can wreck homes, I'm just saying.
Okay.
Don't introduce me to your wife. I'm a home wrecker. I'm a landslide.
Anyway, welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. Thank you so much for being a listener. If you notice, if we're live right now on Twitch, on YouTube, even on Instagram, we're live. We love to take questions and we talk a little bit, do some banter before we get started with these episodes. All of our podcast episodes, or at least most of them, are also on YouTube. Go check us out, mixingmusicpodcast.com. Yeah, check out our YouTube channel, our Twitch channel. Lou even live streams as well. Lots of stuff going on all the time. So today's episode is a very good one. I think it's something that many people have asked for, and I think it's been a long time coming, and we're going to try to do our very best to do an episode about how to hear compression, both what to look out for and what to listen for, and how to train your ears to hear them better in the future. Some things that you can do now. So I think that's what we're going to talk about today for this episode. And the first thing that I wanted to bring up and that we're going to talk about a little bit more is what compression is. Now, you'll hear many engineers, including myself, talk about tonal differences. We like the way that the mid-range sounds with this compressor. We like the way the top end, the low end sounds with this compressor.
The punch.
And just generically, the punch or whatever. But I want you to forget all about that tonal stuff for now. And we want to focus on amplitude at the very beginning. So compression is a tool that is originally mostly supposed to be for amplitude and shaping. I mean, back in the day, before compressors were invented and automated this simple process, there used to be a dude on a fader that, for example, while a vocalist was recording their vocal, they would have to anticipate the vocalist and make sure to turn their vocals down on the fader just a touch when they get loud and turn it back up when they get soft and try to level it out as much as they can. But that necessity went away as soon as compressors were invented. So, number one, you got to think about compression from a pragmatic standpoint. It solves the issue of too much dynamic difference in a song. Amplitude, dynamics, volume, whatever word you use to describe it, it's all the same. We want to make sure that we can control the difference in volume in different points of the song, whether that's in the chorus to the verse or whether that's every snare hit to feel a little bit more consistent, every kick drum hit to feel a little bit more consistent. And so that's kind of like the original purpose. So think about that from the beginning.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because for many people at a starting point, I'm sure you've heard this a bunch of times when we're going through lessons with like some of the people that are kind of newer to engineering. They're kind of getting their feet wet, where it's like, so I should be compressing all the time on all my sources, right? It's like, no, not necessarily. Like, you shouldn't be gunning for compression all the time, because there comes a point where, though we are looking for control and to kind of even things out throughout the mix and from different elements, overcompression can also make it to where it's just too dull of a mix. It can also take away the life of something, you know. So it's one of those things that is statically known as a tool, but is still very much a creative tool.
Yeah. So things like, for example, some of the side effects of compression would be like, if you put it on a drum, bus, or like overheads, you're gonna hear the sound of the room, the reflections in the room. You're gonna hear that room tone a little bit louder. So it'll be a little bit roomier. And so if you want more like drums that fill in like a like a sonic space, compression may be a good idea. But one of the things that I hear all the time is compression makes different tracks thicker or punchier.
My favorite description is louder.
Yeah, and honestly speaking, that is not what it does. Like most of the time, that is the exact opposite of what it does. Compression makes different sources, especially transient based off. Transients, let's try to describe these as much as we can. But transients are in a waveform. The transient is the initial how do you say it?
I guess you could say the initial burst of energy. It's very similar to like a peak of a mountain if you were to look at it from a very steep slope. It's that initial crack of the snare that you hear, not the sustained information after it.
So it's, yeah, exactly. So it's that initial peak in the waveform. That those are called transients. So for example, percussion typically has a lot of transients, but if I sing long notes like this, there's not as many transients. There's no specific part of the waveform that sticks out, maybe except for like the T's and the S's and different consonants if I'm singing.
If you say the word pop versus verbal, you know, ver is kind of like a soft transient.
Hallelujah versus
pop.
Pop that. Okay. There's going to be a lot more transients in that, right? You're exactly right.
Yeah.
So we got to think about this. And so that transient information is going to directly dictate how much headroom that we have in the final stages and can change how loud we can have our mix and master be.
Whether you want to apply just one compressor or two.
Yeah, and it can change how punchiness the mix is. These things, how your transient is hitting and is perceived directly affects the overall tone of your mix, and it's a big deal. And people need to be more aware of how it's affecting their mix, both how to utilize it better to get louder mixes or to get more cohesive, thicker mixes.
Or how to get it more emotionally dynamic mixes.
Exactly. How to lay off or when to lay off, I think, is a good thing to know.
Think about like a rock record versus an R&B soul record. You know, a rock record, you want it very in your face, wall of sound. And then R&B soul is very open, deep. There's dynamics to it. But yet both of them are going to utilize compression. It's just two different approaches.
Absolutely, absolutely. So with compression, we all hear what compression is supposed to do, but we're going to go over in the beginning of the episode, we're going to go over the attack and release and how that works. But before we get into that, let's first talk about something that you should do to train your ears and to help hear compression. If once you go home or once you're in your DAW and you're actually trying to use compression in a way to hear it, and you mess with the attack and release knob and the threshold, the first thing that we want to point out is the importance of using the compressor at the same perceived volume with it bypassed. For example, if you bypass the compressor as a plugin or as hardware, it should be the same volume as it uncompressed, like perceived volume, not metered volume, perceived volume, may be different from your metered volume for sure.
Exactly. Many times when you're talking about compression and how we apply it, you'll hear a lot of professionals say, like, don't look at the meter. Don't look at the gain reduction amount necessarily, because though you may say, oh, go lightly with it, I'll be honest, there's many mastering engineers and mixing engineers who say, you know what, I know I'm technically visually compressing more, but it didn't sound like I did more. You know, they're using their ear to kind of tell at what point it is doing too much or not. So forget about the meters for now. You know, whether it be your output, whether it be your input, whether it be the amount of reduction that you're doing, focusing on the meter actually distracts you more from the actual end goal that you're after, right? If you're trying to listen for compression, it's not going to be done with your eyes.
Amen. Cool. So that's the first thing. The first thing, again, is when you pull up a compressor and you have a lot of, I think when you're first testing a compressor to hear the compression, you should also be doing like a lot of gain reduction.
Oh, yeah.
Like turn that threshold down on whatever source it is, whether it's a drum. I think typically one of my favorite things to listen to compression for is like a drum kit. If you have like overheads or like a room, mm-hmm. or just like a two track, a single stereo track of drums, that you're going to hear a lot of that because there's enough transient and percussive elements in that track. You're going to really hear how the transients are shaped and how the dynamics are controlled and how the compressor reacts. So typically a lot of compressors have attack and release variations. Some of them are set like fast, slow, and they may not give numbers. Some of them have set milliseconds. Some of them are infinitely variable.
Some of them are just a reduction knob like the LA-2A.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. Some of them you have no control over attack release. So just for the sake of testing these out, you should pull up a compressor that you do have the ability to change the attack and release settings.
Even if it's the stock ones.
Yeah, and for now, just for the sake of doing it, keep the ratio at like 4:1. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about ratio later and how that affects. But for the meantime, the higher the ratio, the more clamping and compression, the harder compression it's going to happen, and lower compression ratio, less compression, the smoother it's going to be. But for now, just do 4:1. That's like a classic low but pretty aggressive compression ratio. So let's talk about this. So keep it on 4:1, hit like negative 10 dBs of gain reduction, and then I want you to attack or tweak the attack knob and start really slow, like max out the most amount of milliseconds or the slowest possible that could be, and slowly crank down very slowly and make that attack time faster until you reach its max and go back again. Mm-hmm. So Lou, when we put a compressor on a drum kit, mm-hmm. and we go slow to fast and fast to slow, what are people going to be hearing? Or what do you want to be hearing for?
So typically, if let's say you're doing it on like a drum sample or something, let's say it's just a full kit, first thing you're going to notice with a slower attack is you're definitely going to hear all the transient bleed through, right? The initial attack of the drum. But you're also going to notice that a lot more of the low end actually pokes through. The faster you start getting with it, the tighter it starts becoming. But you start noticing that...
Hold on. Let's keep the tonal stuff at the end. Sorry. I want to focus specifically on the transients.
So,
and the... Because I know we're getting...
Yeah. We can always dive deep into it.
Compressors are literally like our favorite tool because there's so much more that you can... It's more than just dynamics. It has been. But for now, just to keep it simple.
So you'll notice that a lot more of the transient bleeds through. But the faster you go, the more it starts to clamp down on it. And like you said, if it's sticking just to 4:1, you'll start noticing that it gradually reduces the faster you make it. Keeping the threshold the same, keeping the ratio the same, it just starts to clip away at it, and you start noticing that it squares off.
Yeah.
Once it's squared off, you're really just listening to essentially a transientless version of it. There's no more attack on it.
Yeah, and it's interesting when it's relatively slow, like 30 to 60 millisecond of attack on a drum kit, you might hear that initial pop of the snare, like
pa,
be or really loud, and then the tail end or
the sustain
of the snare or the kick or whatever, all of a sudden be a lot quieter. It's literally just that initial pop that is really loud.
Yeah.
And then the faster you go, it just totally disappears. And you will see more gain reduction. So if you're hitting minus 10 with 30 to 60 milliseconds of attack time, by the time you're clamping all the way all the way down, it might be a lot more gain reduction.
Oh, yeah.
15 plus. I don't know how much of a difference it'll make depending. But you're going to hear that. And so again, once you go down and make the attack as fast as possible, you should be able to hear the difference between a slow attack time, fast attack time, and then go ahead and bypass that plugin. Use that makeup gain and try to match the perceived volume of without compression and with compression, and then re-enable the plugin, bypass it, and really try to hear the difference, and then keep going again and make go from fast to slow.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about the release knob. Release knob is also very important. The release knob is basically how quickly the compressor stops working after the signal has gone back below the threshold. We're not really going to go over how a compressor works.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's not the intention of this episode, but rather how to hear. The release time affects signals and tail ends or sustains of different things in an awesome way. Typically, the most transparent way to keep a compressor is a very fast release time. So it's very normal to hear someone say very slow attack time, very fast release time.
Mm-hmm.
And then the slower the release time goes, the more it's going to grab. I think people have heard the compressor is like grabbing. It's mm-hmm. like grabbing too hard or whatever. That's because potentially that's typically with the release time.
Yep.
And for example, on a drum kit, this is one way that it affects the dynamics. So if a snare hits, that means the gain reduction, it's cutting, lowering the volume quite a bit, and it's going to keep the volume low for longer amounts of time. This will directly, for example, we were talking about space before and bringing out the reverb in the room. If the release time is fast, it's going to stop clamping down. The compressor is going to stop reacting faster. So it's going to snap on the snare or the kick drum, and it's going to release on the sustain. So you're going to hear that sustain. You're going to hear that room a lot more. But then if you have a slow release, you're not going to hear the room as much.
Yeah. And if you time it to the next, let's say, snare hit, right? Let's say you're
time it by ear.
Yeah. Let's say that you time it by ear and you just have it on the actual snare. If you time the release right enough, you can actually remove a lot of the room. Now, it doesn't permanently take it out. It doesn't just mute the room, essentially. But you'd be surprised. You can actually use this stylistically if you time the release right. So just like how DK said, if you have it fast, you can almost think of it as we mentioned before. You got to use the makeup gain to match the volume, right? If you wanted the room louder, a slower attack with a faster release is perfect for that. And if you wanted to dial back the room, all you'd have to do is back up the release a little bit, and you'd actually hear the room get quieter, but the attack of the snare stay the same because you've left the attack alone.
And it's interesting, oftentimes, specifically with a drum kit, the slower the release time, the less you hear the other things like hi-hats.
Exactly.
So if you have too much hi-hat bleed, or the hi-hats all of a sudden get really, really loud, which is a cool sound in itself, so maybe that's why you want to keep a fast release time. But if you do a slower release time, you're going to hear less of the sustain of each hit. Also, you're going to hear less of that hi-hat and the bleed of different things go away. Less of that room tone. So to put it in a nutshell, that attack time, you're going to hear the initial transient information, that initial punch of each hit, each percussive hit, and then the release is like the sustain, the tail end of everything. So you're going to hear more, with the fast release, you're going to hear more room, more sustain, mm-hmm. and with a slow release, it's going to do less room, and it's going to be less, sustain is going to be different based on...
Yeah, depending on the source.
Yeah, depending on the source. Like, because I think it's like the opposite for if you do like a bass.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think right now. I don't remember. Well, if you do a slow release on a bass,
it tightens up the low end. Because if you think about it, and I guess this is where we could jump into tonality of application, right? Just with attack and release, how we can affect the tone of something. If you think about like playing with the timing of the release on like a bass instrument, let's say you go for a slow attack, that probably means you want a little more thump out of it. But if you're trying not to make it too wubby or anything,
wubby.
Yeah. But let's say that you're not trying to go too much at that, you could actually slow down the release little by little, and you'll actually hear the actual definition of the bass tighten up. And because of that, you can actually get it to fit more of a funk pocket as much as you can make it like just a static sub bass going on in the mix if you made it a faster release. Sometimes you can just change the character with the actual release knob enough to where you can actually make it fit a pocket.
Yeah. So I think the next challenge that we want you to do, after you get a drum kit and it messes with the attack and release knob and bypass it, mm-hmm. you know, and all that jazz, the next thing is to pull up is a bass, whether it's an 808 or a bass guitar. I think bass guitar is going to be better. It's gonna you're going to hear better. It's a little. It's typically an octave higher potentially than 808s that are way too low. There's more harmonics, so you can hear it a little bit better if you can. Get a bass guitar going, just solo that, and do the same thing. Attack and release, get some lots of gain reduction going. And then also, you're right, listen for the balance of the low end, how much low end is there.
Yeah.
What's really interesting, depending on the compressor, typically one of the ways that you can get distortion out of compressors, because compressors can't handle this, mm-hmm. is an extremely fast attack time and a release time. So one of the tricks that I used to do with my outboard 1176s is that on 808s, I would distort them by going 20 to 1 or all.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Buttons in, which is just totally limiting, just high ratio.
Like if you wanted a transient, it didn't exist.
Yeah, high ratio, and then the fastest attack time and the fastest release time, and then the more I push, the more gain reduction I have, the more the 808s got distorted. And then if you want to, you can use the attack knob. I think I've talked about this on the podcast before. If you slow down the attack, you're going to get less distortion. It's like a really interesting, it's like a mix knob for distortion. And it's one of those things that you can try. Some compressors do that, and thus how cool and fun compressors are, because you can now use them as like a total distortion or tone box, and that's depending on what it's modeling and different things. A lot of these compressors nowadays, modern compressors, are like super clean, so that you can do fast attack, fast release with a very clean signal. But yeah, something like an analog 1176 is going to totally just, it's going to distort it. It sounds freaking dope, and it's totally usable. Yeah, like in bass, you're going to hear the low end tighten up with release times you talked about. Also, the last thing that I want you to try, the last source that I want you to try is a vocal.
Yeah.
A vocal. Even like a rap vocal versus a spoken vocal. Because rap vocals, they're a lot faster. They're rhyming, a lot more consonants. It's going to react to compressors differently, slightly differently than like long note ballad type vocals.
Well, you want to definitely listen for sibilants and transients from like T's and P's and all this. Because a lot of people talk about wanting like a clean, forward, but like natural sounding vocal. But the funny thing is, there's nothing very natural over compressed vocals. But there's also a stylistic sound to it. Think about it. Like one of my favorite rappers coming up was Common, and when you listen to Go, it's actually really dynamic vocal, but it's also very compressed. It sounds very clean, but I would associate that more to just having like a well-timed compressor. But you listen to like a lot of trap records nowadays, and like we're kind of used to that distressor sound or kind of like very in your face kind of vocal. So because of that, there's a lot of sibilance. But then there's records like, what is it? Is it Boy by Charlie Puth that you always reference that has like a ton of sibilance? But yeah, it doesn't sound
and
like
attention. Attention is
attention,
the one.
Attention, that's what it is. Where it has a lot of sibilance, but it doesn't actually have a lot of compression going on. But if you were to, you know, play with the attack and let's say make it too fast and slow down the release, you'd actually get more sibilance out of it. But if you were to actually slow down the attack and speed up the release, you'd almost get the same effect depending how hard you're hitting it. Like, it's kind of this funny thing where, like, with vocals, you almost have a different setting for every vocalist.
Yeah, for sure. I think what this will lead to one of my least favorite and most annoying mistakes that I hear all the time. This is a common mistake. Again, if you're trying, pragmatically means that, like, you're looking for a solution. So we're literally speaking not based on how we feel, but, like, solution focused. So if I'm being pragmatic, I use, and practical, that's a better word, practical, mm-hmm. I use a compressor to, so when in a ballad song, the girls or woman or man yells the chorus and they're like kind of leading up to it and then they start yelling and sustain some notes. I hear this is like one of the most common mistakes, especially with like a really emotional song where there's going to be tons of dynamics in the verses. They're whispering and then all of a sudden they're yelling in the chorus. We hear that compression clamp way too hard during that yell and that sustain, and you can hear it a lot, and there's no amount of automation that's going to make it not sound compressed. Yeah. Like, I will sit there and try to make it sound better with, like, clip gain automation and volume automation, but that, it's not going to, it's going to ruin
it. There's a difference.
Yeah, so you can overcompress, especially with, I hear it the most with ballad vocals, slow, emotional ballad vocals, men and women. One of the mixes that I had to do with one of my clients a few months ago, it was exactly that. And she had hired me specifically because, yo, the recording engineer effed up. And she's not an engineer, but she could still hear that the emotions were compressed.
Yep.
The emotions were pushed down. Yeah, like, I think compressed is the best word. The emotions were compressed because of the actual compressors. Like, that loud note needed to be, that loud sustained note needed to come out, but that CL1B just clamped down too hard, and the engineer didn't think about it because they were just trying not to clip the Pro
the
Tools.
Meter.
Exactly, so that's why you leave headroom. And that was a bitch to try to fix, and it was as, she was like, thanks you for trying your best. It still wasn't fixed. And that was literally, I spent hours and hours automating it. And it's like, you cannot get that to come back. And that's something that you lose. So go ahead and mess with automating vocals. I think, again, rap vocals that are consistent energy, consistent consonants all the way through versus really emotional vocals where it's quiet in the verse and louder in the choruses is also great practice to hear that compression.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like with vocals, going back. If it's meant to be loud, you want to hear it loud. There's a tone to loudness. And if you clamp down too hard, it's too much. Same thing with drums. Practically speaking, if you record live drums, every snare hit is not going to be the same exact volume. But practically speaking, I want the snare to be really consistent so it pokes through the same amount every time.
Yeah.
That's why we use a compressor on snare drums. And then the side effect that we like to think about is how it changes the transient and the tone of the snare drum.
Yep.
That's the side. Like, ooh, this compressor gives a little bit more distortion or saturation. It's like kind of pushing it and it gives that sustain a little bit more. And then there's like the character of the compressor. So now we're in the next challenge and way to think about it is to use those same three or four sources again, but on different compressors.
Yep. Go for something. There's many different types, like to name a few. You got like Verimuse, you got Optical, you got FET, you got VCA. But all of them have a different intention, and they were all invented at different timelines in history, right? So they all served a very specific purpose. For instance, like we all hear about the SSL G-Bus, which is a VCA compressor. My favorite thing is when people tell me that I love the tone of the SSL G-Bus. But the funny thing is VCAs were invented to have no tone, but it was because of the way it compressed that it had a tone, not that it itself was tonally relevant, because technically SSL's whole market plan, let's be honest, was to be a clean console.
Yeah, it wasn't to be possible.
Exactly. But that didn't actually happen with their compressor. It actually had a very unique sound to it. But that's kind of the cool thing too, because when you use something like, let's say, a Manly Verimue, which funny enough, their Verimue compressor is literally just called the Manly Verimue. Great marketing. But It's really funny because even that one, like you do a tiny bit of compression and you hear it right away. You do a lot of compression on the SSL and you start to hear it. You know, they react very differently. The LA-2A only has one gain reduction knob. And the more you twist it, the more it actually changes the attack, release, and the ratio. It actually becomes this ever-changing setting to where, like, unless you put it in the same exact spot again, you'll never get that setting again. Which is actually very unique. And then in later series, you'll notice that there's an actual bias knob that was originally made for a little flathead to twist, where it said, focus more on the top end information or just be flat.
Yeah.
You know, but all these things created different reactions. So you'll hear people who say, I love LA-2As on drums, and people who say, I hate LA-2As on drums. Well, what was it and what type of genre? What style drums? Like, what made them react that way? So, like, at this point, now you're listening for stylistic difference, which is kind of the great thing about how me and DK look at compressors. There's a style. There's a feng shui to the sound.
Yeah, and I think that there's a lot to be said about... There's a lot of... Probably between the two of us, there's probably a lot of compressors that we use that are not traditionally used the way that we use them. We have found different ways to use these compressors that are traditionally used for other things or culturally used for other reasons, which lets me goes into the next little bit that I want to talk about is I think it's okay to look into and study why the SSL G-Bus is used on mix bus or on drums and to... I don't think you should aimlessly use different compressors or tools just because someone told you to. But I think that's a great starting point to understand why this compressor is typically used on drums or on vocals and like figure out why people like it and see if other compressors works on those different things in a way that you like. I think like starting point, just use compressors based on what other people have said they liked it on, and then go beyond that and discover other things as well. The last challenge that I want to do after you've gone through these individual sources is putting compressors on a mix bus or just on an actual song, like a full range song. It's got bass, it's got drums or 808s or whatever.
Put it on something you're working on.
Something percussive, it's got vocals. Put it on a full entire mix. And now we're going to talk about tone. Hit that compressor real heavy. Maybe you do the attack and release times differently. But this time I want you to hear how it tonally changes, because now that you have a track that has full spectrum, full frequency from low to high, you should be able to hear quite clearly what's changing.
Yep.
Now you may hear there's a couple different ways to hear for tonal differences. Is one is like tonal balance. Think about it in frequencies, but you may also hear these different instruments coming out, and that's going to be related to frequencies as well. For example, and typically in most songs, if a compressor emphasizes and kind of adds this mid-range flavor to it, you might hear the vocals be a little bit louder, or the snare, the crack of the snare be a little bit louder. You're not going to hear as much piano. Or if you hear that low mid, so for example, one of my favorite compressors, the Magic Death Eye, has this beautiful low end, low mid thing. No matter how much I compress, it's going to really enhance and smooth out, fill out that low mid frequency. Mm-hmm. Like that 2 to 500 just sounds beautiful. And this is where it gets ultra nerdy, and you can actually use compressors for more than their practical use, which is clamping down on dynamics, controlling dynamic variances, and then turning it into a tool beyond that for the saturation, for the distortion, for the tonality that it's not supposed to impart, but it naturally does.
Oh,
especially plugins that are emulating hardware, because there's no way for an electrical signal to go through that many capacitors, transistors, VCAs or whatever and have it not change the tone. Like it's going to have to, and that's why different compressors are so popular and famous for different sources, is because how beautifully it changed the tone on top of the actual practical amplitude control.
Like one of my favorite ones, to be honest, is the Distressor. It could be both clean as hell, and it could also be the most disgusting thing you've ever heard. It takes, what did Dave Durr compare it to? He said it's supposed to essentially emulate three very common compressors, which more align with the LA-2A, LA-3A, LA-3A, and 1176. So funny enough, you'll notice that the ratio goes from 1:1 all the way to what called a nuke. And the nuke is basically all buttons in. But the moment you turn that ratio on, even if you hit it a little bit, you immediately hear a difference, even if you're doing 1 decibel of compression. Mm. But he also has this really cool one, which is a 1-to-1 ratio, British mode, which you hear the harmonic distortion.
So it's like almost, it's compressing, but because of the saturation.
The saturation
itself. The overloading
itself.
Of the signal.
Exactly. And that's the compression compressor. Versus the ratio compression, which actually has its whole other side of compression that, you know, we can make another episode based on that, using saturation as a form of compression.
So, for example, like if you have tape machine emulation, there are some tape machine plugins where if you push it, there's actually a gain reduction meter on the plugin. For example, tape face on Kive.
Kive Audio?
Yeah, Kive Audio has tape face, and there's a VU meter option where it says gain reduction. You can see how much gain reduction is being applied. Yep. So it's not the tape machine is not a compressor, but because it's overloading the signal and it can't handle that transient information, it rounds it off. It's naturally compressing the signal. Which is, it's not, again, this is really confusing because it's not a compressor, but saturation because it can't handle, it smooths out those really peaky transients. It can't handle it, so it overloads the signal, distorts it, and it rounds it off or it squares it off, and thus basically compressing. So that's what tape machines are really awesome for. That's why people use them, is because there's this subtle amount of compression going on.
Yep.
But it's not intentional. It's because there's an
actual... The smoothing
actual...
happens, and because of that, you also hear other frequencies get pushed, and it starts to give that sensation of compression.
Yeah, there's not enough headroom. It's mechanically inferior to infinite headroom digital.
Yeah.
Because if it's infinite headroom digital, that transient's going to be maintained if you're within zero, right? But with tape, it can't. If it's too hot, it can't. So it's going to round it off. Thus, compression happens. Don't worry about that right now. We're not talking about that kind of compression. But I just want you to be aware that that kind of compression does exist. For example, if you're a guitar player and you go through a fuzz pedal, there's no dynamics. You play a tiny little... tiny little pick note. It's very quiet. It's going to be just as loud as the hardest slam down the strings because it's already so distorted and so compressed from that distortion.
Yep.
It's really, really, that's basically it. So different ways to think about that. Even a synth, when you record a synth and you see the waveform, if it's like a heavy sawtooth synth, you're going to see it be a little bit more square and less dynamic than a soft pad, which may swell and you can see it go in and out, maybe even, like it's not as square. The square wave is literally it overloading the signal, going past zero, and it cutting it off, and it becomes square, and that's what causes that buzzy distortion that we know today.
And love.
Yeah. And love, yeah, for sure. Interesting, right? So it's all about the dynamics or the amplitude, the volume of those signals. Anyway, I think this is a great introductory episode into how to listen for compression.
Yeah.
And yes, compression is very difficult. So once again, to recap, listen first for amplitude difference, not for tonal differences.
Yeah.
Listen first for amplitude. Hear how the transient, and if you need to look up what transient is, just what are transients in audio on YouTube? Someone's going to explain it better than we can over vocal-only podcast, voice-only podcast. It's going to change the transient information and the sustain or the tail end after each percussive hit or whatever sustain notes. It's going to change everything. Make sure you hear for volume differences, then move into tonal differences. Try different compressors, try different sources, bypass, and when you bypass again, make sure that the dry signal is the same volume as the wet signal. That means compressed signal. So make sure that you can compare it effectively so you can hear the difference, and then just try that. Compression is very practical. It's very useful. It's one of the secrets of how to get mixes very, very loud is by compressing along the way, not all at the very end.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of secrets in how to use compressors, but that's not what this episode is about. It's more about how to hear compression. Hopefully that helps. This episode is sponsored by the Mixing Music Podcast.
Oh.
If you like the podcast and want to hear more practical tips, technical and practical tips of how to improve your mixes for $4 a month or $40 a year, you can sign up for our exclusive episodes. Our exclusive episodes releases every Wednesday and Thursday. So instead of one episode a week, you get three episodes a week. So three times the amount of episodes. And you can go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive to get access and find out more about the exclusive episodes. Once again, it's mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. All right. Any other thoughts on compression, Lou?
That, which we talked about, is a very baseline intro to compression. There's many stylistic ways, and it's not just harmonic. We didn't touch on like sidechain or practical uses for sidechain aside from tonal shaping of the compression, but honestly speaking, focus on just the basics and you wouldn't believe how far these basic pieces of information could take you. If you really wanted to shape your drums to smack really hard or sit in the back of the mix, just listening for attack, release, and level matching will make a world of a difference. So just focus on that. There's a ton of YouTube videos on a million other things. But hey, my dad used to say, you know, there's a million ways to skin a cat. I don't know why you would, but fuck it. There's a million ways to compress a drum set. Just focus on the basics for now.
Amen. So on that note, good luck, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy. Are you tired of using Google Drive or Dropbox to send files to clients? Well, never get burned again with FilePass. I love and use FilePass exclusively for sending files to my clients. It's a cloud file sharing website specifically made by engineers for engineers. It's absolutely amazing. Go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/FilePass to check out the full feature list and subscribe today. Never lose another dime to burned projects. Happy mixing, my friends, and enjoy the show.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.